So Krishna is analyzing about karma. The last and part of the answer to the karma that he does is about sukha. So he talks about how happiness is of three types as per the modes, and all of us strive for the happiness according to the mode that we are in. So this analysis of the modes has two aspects to it. One is that naturally, according to the mode that we are in, we will have a particular kind of knowledge, a particular kind of determination, and we will seek a particular kind of happiness. So that is just as water comes down to its level. So like that, depending on our present mode, naturally we will go towards that. So one purpose of this analysis is to help us understand which mode we are in. By looking at what kind of determination do I have, by looking at, okay, how do I look at the world, what is my knowledge, we can understand what mode I am in. But the other aspect of this analysis is that we can choose to cultivate a different kind of knowledge, a different kind of determination. We can strive for a different kind of happiness. And say, I may be in passion right now, and I may naturally become attracted to passionate happiness. But if I strive for happiness and goodness, by striving for that happiness, I will rise to the mode of goodness. So this is this analysis is in this way serving two purposes. One purpose is that it serves us by helping us understand where we are. And second is it provides us a pathway to where we would like to go. So both way, this analysis helps us. You remember one of the points I mentioned in how scriptures are like a map. So in a map, okay, this is where I am and this is where I should go. Okay, this is the path to go there. So the modes are, in a sense, they offer us a map of our inner life. What's the matter? It's going to be problematic here. We will. Which was the verse we were in? 18:35, na? 36. Oh, 218, sorry. Sukham Tvaidanim Trividham Shrunu Me Bharata Rishabha Abhyasadramate Yatra Dukkhantam Chanigachati. So Sukham Tvaidanim Trividham. So Krishna is saying Trividham. Sukha is of three types. And Shrunu here Bharata Rishabha. And actually, this second part is analyzed by different acharyas differently. So the way Srila Prabhupada analyzes it is that he says by which, so abhyasa dramate yatra. So the conditioned soul enjoys this kind of happiness, and sometimes dukkhantam chanigachati. Sometimes that means if the conditioned soul chooses happiness and goodness, and after that strives towards transcendence, then that conditioned soul will become liberated. So in a sense, Srila Prabhupada analyzes this verse as one unit wherein all the kinds of happiness that will be talked about in the subsequent three verses are integrated in the second part. So by practice, somebody actually to some extent practice is required even for passionate or ignorant enjoyment. Sometimes first time a person drinks, the person doesn't enjoy. Person may even feel like vomiting or a very bitter taste, but afterward the person starts getting habituated to it, and then after habituation there is addiction. So abhyasa here refers to habituation. So abhyasa dramate yatra. By habituation one enjoys, and one of those enjoyment, that is the sattvic enjoyment, one may eventually become liberated. Chakravarti Pad in his commentary used a slightly different translation. He clubs this with the next verse. And he says that actually the conditioned soul, his implication is that conditioned souls are naturally in passion ignorance. And they don't need much practice for passionate or ignorant enjoyment. But to cultivate happiness and goodness, one requires abhyasa. So, abhyasa dharmate yatra. It is not that, say for example, chanting or studying scripture or gain or relishing the refined pleasures of goodness. It requires practice. So, abhyasa dharmate yatra. But if by this practice we will enjoy this happiness, then over a period of time, what will happen by that is dukkhantam chanigachati. One will be able to end that misery. So in this verse itself, Krishna is telling that he's recommending the mode of happiness and the mode of goodness by telling that by this kind of happiness, you'll require practice to gain this kind of happiness. But if you do that, then over a period of time, dukkhantam, you'll attain the end of misery. Dukkhanta is a very nice word, end of misery. It will come to the end of our miserable existence is there in this world. It will come to an end. And for that, actually, it's not that we have to do a lifelong miserable austerity. There is some austerity till we become practiced, till we become habituated. After that, abhyasat ramate yatra. Ramate. One will start delighting in it. So, here after talking about this, let's look at the happiness in the three modes.
Yattadagre vishamiva. Vishamiva. Pariname amritopamam. Pariname amritopamam. Tatsukham satvikam proktam. Atma buddhi prasadajam. Atma buddhi prasadajam.
So, the characteristic of this happiness is it is poison in the beginning. Agre vishamiva. Pariname amritopamam. Did I show you the PPT of P and P and everything? No, I mean I must have drawn the concept in my Isha Upanishad classes, but let us see here. If I have it here. Yeah. Is this the one? Most of you have seen this marshmallow, no? Marshmallow video you have seen? How many of you have seen it? Really? All of you are so expert at videos. How come you have not seen it? Anyway, maybe this is the only video I saw in my Gita class. Most of you have probably seen it. Marshmallow. None of you have seen it? You have seen it, Vasundhu? Surprising. Oh God. Anyway, my computer has got stuck. We'll just go ahead. So Krishna is telling over here, yattad agre vishamiva, that which tastes like poison in the beginning, but which will taste like nectar in the end. That he says is happiness in the mode of goodness. So another characteristic that he is telling over here of this kind of happiness is that it will lead eventually to the issue. Anyway, we'll see afterwards. He says, "Even tat sukham satvikam proktam." The result of this is atma buddhi prasadajam. Atma buddhi means that it will lead to spiritual knowledge, or in a buddhi that is connected with the atma. Atma buddhi prasadajam. So prasadajam means born of the satisfaction. So, prasada is we use the word prasada actually for mercy. But in a sense prasada madigachati. Prasada actually it means the word prasada is related with prasannata. Satisfaction. So prasada madigachati. So actually prasada is to make us, it should make us satisfied. That is the idea. Krishna's mercy makes us satisfied. If you see that verse, what is that? What was before that? Prasadamadi. Ragadvesha vimuktaistu vishayanindriya ischaran atma vashyair vidhe atma prasadamadi gachyati. So 2.64, Krishna says that by regulation, when we regulate ourselves by regulation, according to scripture, we will become satisfied. And then when we are satisfied, dukkha sarva prasadaya dukkhanam hanirastu pajayati. So And so here Krishna is telling that by this kind of happiness, intelligence will be born. Which intelligence? Atma Buddhi. If you see, by material enjoyment, the happiness that we get in spirit, in material sense gratification, by that our intelligence is destroyed. Krishna says, Kamai stai stai ritagyanaha. So material enjoyment destroys our intelligence. But Krishna, spiritual happiness, it nourishes our intelligence further. So how does it nourish our intelligence? In a sense that when we experience spiritual happiness, we realize for ourselves through experience that what the scriptures are talking about is reality. And in that sense, that experiential conviction reinforces our intelligence. Another thing that happens is when we experience spiritual happiness through practice, that leads to purification also. Because how are we experiencing that happiness? We are experiencing that happiness by contact with Krishna. And contact with Krishna purifies. So when there is purification, then our vision further becomes clarified. That also leads to intelligence. So, it is that this mode of happiness and the mode of goodness, it is not only going to make us happy, it is also going to make us wise. So, the idea is, for example, if a student is studying in school. So, now for the student, playing may be very enjoyable. But the student just gets determined, no, I will study. Then over a period of time, that student will also gain a higher joy of learning. Isn't it? Learning new concepts. The student doesn't want to go to school, but after some time, student or teacher asks, what is your name? He says, name. And he says, you know how to write your name? He says, no. He doesn't even know something called writing. He says, this is how you write your name. And he starts, oh, I wrote my name. And he starts feeling happy about that. So like that, there is a higher, more refined pleasure that comes from learning. And that student is getting the pleasure of learning and is also becoming learned, isn't it? So that enjoyment also makes the person wise. So that's how the happiness in the mode of goodness works out. No, it's not going to work. It's all hung here. So maybe we'll see afterwards. Now let's look at happiness in the mode of passion. Vishayendriya sanyogad. Yatadagre amritopamam. Yatadagre amritopamam. Pariname vishamiva. Tatsukam rajasam smritam. Vishayendriya sanyogad. By contact of senses of the sense objects, the happiness that comes is, it tastes like nectar in the beginning, but then it is poison in the end. Pariname vishamiva. Tat sukham rajasam smritam. So what is this pariname vishamiva? What is the misery that comes from this enjoyment? Why should it be considered as poison? Sorry? Okay, karmic reactions is one thing. But what if that enjoyment is not necessarily sinful? Then there are no karmic reactions. It's not that all enjoyment and passion has to be sinful. Impressions, attachments. You know what does Krishna say in the 14th chapter when describing the mode of passion? Rajasastu phalam dukkham. So Rajoguna, the characteristic of Rajoguna is that it will create craving. And that craving will keep us forever dissatisfied. So many people may not believe in the law of karma. In general, Srila Prabhupada did not talk much about hell. And the way Prabhupada preached was not that if you do some sense gratification, you will go to hell. That was not the basis of Srila Prabhupada's preaching. You know, we have fear, desire, duty, love. Srila Prabhupada wanted to help us to develop love for God. So the preaching was not fear-based. Fear-based preaching is highly alienating. It alienates people intellectually and emotionally. Intellectually, people feel that what is the proof that hell exists? And this is just a concept which you have created so that you can get people to submit to your dogmas. And emotionally, the concept of hell creates a notion of a very unloving, cruel, judgmental God. Which is not what actually Krishna is. So, the concept of hell should not be the thrust of the preaching when we are sharing Krishna consciousness with others, when we want to say, when we want to tell people that actually there are reactions, we can talk about reactions even in this life. You know, it's not necessary. The way society is getting into all kinds of social, familial, health problems because of unrestricted indulgence, we don't have to talk about hell. Even in this life, we can see there are so many hellish consequences that come up. Various kinds of diseases. And even if somebody says, I can enjoy without getting any diseases, I'll have... they have the concept called protected sex. You know, you should not have unprotected sex, you should have protected sex. But actually, the protection is not just some having some contraception. It is, the protection is self-control. All other, they may say that, okay, the diseases are going to be reduced or whatever, but the craving is going to be there. The craving keeps a person perpetually dissatisfied. So the idea is, here, at this worldly level, one can see that the more a person enjoys, sometimes people have this whole idea that sex is a necessity. And now, in a sense, is sex like food? Is somebody going to die without sex? Sex may seem to be a necessity, but people mistake the irresistible to be essential. They're two different things. What is irresistible is not necessarily essential, although it may seem essential to me. If I am an alcoholic, then for me alcohol may seem irresistible. And if I do not have any means to purify myself, I do not have adequate willpower, if I am too addicted, then it will be irresistible for me. But just because something is irresistible does not make it essential. It is not necessary for me to drink to live. It is not that if I don't drink, I'll die. So, food is something which is essential. If I don't eat, my bodily system will not sustain itself. I will die. But on the other hand, sex, it may seem irresistible, and for many people, it may be irresistible also. Especially if they don't know about any higher happiness, they don't have a connection with Krishna and spiritual happiness, then it will be irresistible. But just because, but their condition is like that of an alcohol addict who doesn't know about any way to break free from alcohol. So it is irresistible, but irresistible doesn't mean essential. Essential would mean that without which physically we cannot survive. Irresistible means that without which psychologically we feel I can't live. I must get it. The two are different. So, actually speaking, for most people, sex is a psychological necessity, and people think that it is a physical necessity. So, it's not a physical necessity for bodily survival. But it may be a psychological necessity because people are just so infatuated with it. And it is being the attraction is being aggravated continuously by the media images that keep coming in. So that is like adding to the intoxication, adding to the addiction. But that craving keeps a person constantly agitated. It isn't that a person becomes satisfied or stays satisfied. So at this level itself, we can see that this leads to terrible suffering in terms of constant perpetual craving, dissatisfaction. And then beyond that, as you said, there are diseases which come up in this life. There are so many conflicts. You know, when there is uncontrolled sexual desire, then people fight over it. Wars take place and conflicts take place. And all kinds of problems result when people are not able to rein in the desire to enjoy. So, Vishaya Indriya Sanyogat can refer to all kinds of sense gratification. But actually, Prabhupada refers to in the purport, he's talking primarily about gross sense gratification in terms of sex. So, pariname visham iva. Actually, this one has to, by experience, recognize it. That over a period of time, just as a person, when a person becomes sober, right, sober means if a person is an alcoholic and the person gives alcohol, then it's said that the person has become sober. So, when a person has become sober, actually, there are what is called as withdrawal symptoms. Withdrawal symptoms means when a person has addiction, is addicted to a particular substance, when the person gives up that substance, the person finds it very difficult to survive without it. So when that person is withdrawing from the addiction, at that time, the psychologically and physically, there are certain characteristics, certain symptoms that are created. And they make it difficult for the person to give it up. But those withdrawal symptoms, depending on whether it is alcohol or there is drugs or cigarette, they don't last for long. One can, the physical symptoms, one can withdraw from it. It doesn't take much time. However, an addict often uses the addiction to cope with life as a means of coping with life. And there is so much stress, there is so much frustration, there is so much loneliness. Let me just drink this and forget everything. And that is a psychological battle. And that has to be fought at a psychological level. And the battle at the physical level, where there are physical withdrawal symptoms, that gets over a short period of time. So, same with respect to sex. If somebody is habituated to having sex, the desire will come. Physically, the semen gets formed, and then when the semen is formed and the bladder and the cavity gets full, then that may be passed out, either through nightfalls or whatever. But if a person decides to break that pattern, there is a little challenge. But that physical craving, after some time, it stops. The Vedic culture describes that actually semen is present in subtle form throughout the body, and it's when there is lusty contemplation or lusty glancing, then that subtle semen becomes gross, and then that gets secreted in the body. But if that is not there, then the semen is not formed, and then it doesn't have to be excreted. But many times, people, especially when say people have the habit of masturbation, they watch some videos or pictures and then they masturbate, then that actually is often their way of coping with the stresses of life. They feel, oh, there's so many problems, I just look at this and I enjoy, I just forget everything. So that if people are using pleasure as a sex pleasure as a psychological medication, as a way to medicate oneself at the mental level, then that is something which one has to deal with at a mental level. One has to find alternative ways to get that feeling of that capacity to manage one's stress. Actually, in devotional service, we have many ways. We have kirtans, we have philosophy, we can take darshan of deities, we can take, maybe associate with some devotee who inspires us very much. You know, very often, if we find that our attachments are, we're finding it difficult to give up our attachments, it's not so much that the desire is so intolerably strong. It's often that we are using that pleasure to medicate ourselves, to cope with life. And actually, it's a very bad way to cope with life, because it only makes the problem worse. You know, we as it is have to go on practicing Krishna consciousness, and every time we indulge, the craving is going to become stronger and the battle is going to become tougher afterwards. So it's going to make life difficult, and it's not just for devotees. Even for non-devotees, if they get into this, then the demand becomes more and more, because the whole the purpose, okay, now let me analyze and explain this better. So there is the desire for pleasure, and there is the desire to avoid misery. Now, we have these both. I want to enjoy, and I also want to get rid of misery. So, when people take drugs, one thing is they feel high, they get some enjoyment. But that enjoyment is not what is primarily addictive. What happens is that enjoyment, it comes, it goes, and if a person just restrains oneself, it goes away after some time. But there is the desire to avoid misery, to forget misery. And if for that one goes towards drugs, then miseries are going to come in life. And whenever miseries come in life, the person has to find some way to cope with that misery. And if the tracks in the mind are made in such a way that whenever there is misery, one gets pushed towards the drug addiction. Then that's why dealing with drug addiction is not just about stopping the person from taking drugs. It's actually about learning to live learning to cope with the stresses of life without resorting to drugs. So that's why in general, the most successful de-addiction programs are the programs which involve cultivating of new habits. If people are religiously minded, and then Alcoholics Anonymous is a very successful program because it enables people to connect with God. Other programs which enable people to develop some more healthier habits give a better way to cope with the stresses of life. Then they can get rid of the addictions. It's not so. Misery is something which is going to come in everyone's life, but everyone doesn't become an addict because of misery. So it's not that getting into addiction is the necessary way to cope with misery. Although, if we have done that, we may feel very habituated to that. But we have to break that internal pattern. No, that's actually, you can call it as a reaction pattern. When I feel miserable, when I feel lonely, when I feel frustrated, then there's an immediate reaction pattern. Oh, what should I do? I need some pleasure. I need some relief. Where should I get that? Okay, let me do this. So that's the relief pattern which we seek. So we have to create an alternative reaction sequence, an alternative relief pattern for ourselves. Okay, whenever I feel miserable, whenever I feel lonely, let me do something. Yesterday I was telling about the activities which give us strength. So if we find out, yes, I just like to hear some devotees here, then I just forget everything, lose myself in that. Let me do that. Or let me just chant intensely, let me go and take darshan of the deity, whatever, we have to find out what it is for us. So observing what helps us to cope with life within the realm of Krishna consciousness, and doing that activity will free us from our attachments. So our attachments, they attract us not only because they give us pleasure or they promise pleasure, but also because they promise relief. Relief from boredom, relief from loneliness, relief from frustration. And we have to redirect our need for relief from that attraction, that addiction, to Krishna. From that material attachment to Krishna. And then we will find that getting rid of the attachments is much easier. Any questions about this? So, yeah.
So, more real than mental and intellectual.
Sensual pleasures are more real than mental or intellectual pleasures, and that's why they are more difficult to give up. Yes, that is why it is also important for us to, whenever we feel agitated or tempted, to even physically relocate ourselves, to do some physical changes. The Krishna, if we see, when he starts describing how to control lust, 3.41, first he says is, Tasmatam indriyanya adau niyamya bharatarshava. First, regulate the senses. And then he talks about, say, how there is a hierarchy, indriyani paranya, or indriyabhya parammana, about the senses of the mind, intelligence, and the soul. And then he says, evam buddhe param buddhva, samstabhya atmanam atmana. With intelligence, situate yourself on the spiritual platform. So, in general, if we find ourselves physically in the arena of temptation, then it's best to get out of there and do physically some activity which relocates us in a devotionally conducive place. I mean, just go to the temple, go in the presence of the deities, go in the association of some devotees. And that actually, physical movement is often very helpful. Just physical, it is not the solution, but it is the beginning of the solution. So often our thoughts largely follow our situations. If I'm physically in a particular situation, I start thinking of that kind of things. It's not necessary. I can be in the temple hall and I can think of Maya also. But in general, our externals do affect our internals. So that's why physical things at our level of consciousness are definitely real for us. So therefore, it's best to situate ourselves in places where we don't feel so tempted. And the pleasures of Krishna consciousness don't necessarily have to be only mental or intellectual. Yes, they are. But actually, we can even, if I physically play mudanga, I write something down physically. So, many times, I know certain philosophical points, but just getting myself, I know some shlokas, very important shlokas, and they are so meaning packed. But just write down those shlokas. Do something at the physical level. that helps us, because our consciousness is affected by our physical situation. So that way, by doing some activities physically, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had said that when he was writing, sometimes he would just walk along and he would speak aloud to himself. He would have Purva Paksha, he would speak the opposing argument and he would speak the refutations. And does this make sense? And, then he would speak another refutation. And then he would compile everything. And then he would write. So, in that sense, we know that our physical situation affects us. That's why we can have physical or material stimuli for invoking devotional consciousness. What does it mean, material stimuli for invoking devotional consciousness? Certain material things can help us to remember Krishna. Now, for example, if I have taken initiation and I have the photo of my initiation, then I know, okay, I have taken my vow and my spiritual master has given me his mercy, and this is my lifelong commitment. Just taking that photo and looking at that photo, it's a physical stimuli, but it inspires us. So for all of us, the physical stimuli might be different, but using this physical stimuli helps. Okay? So it's like there is this physical level, mental level, spiritual level. By mental, I mean the whole subtle body level, mental, intellectual, whatever. So the sensual pleasures are only at the physical level. But it is not at the spiritual level, spiritual pleasures are only at the spiritual level. The spiritual pleasures are also at the mental level, they are also at the physical level. Not that the pleasure is physical, but we can connect with them even through the physical levels. So if I am the soul in between over here, I am a sadhaka, on this side is physical pleasure, which is alluring me. And I am at the physical level of consciousness only. On the other side is Krishna consciousness happiness, which is at the physical, the gross material level, subtle material level, and at the spiritual level. So I have to relocate myself from this to this. And then it's not just enough being here. When I come to a situation that is physically more conducive for remembering Krishna, then I have to raise my consciousness. But being here and raising my consciousness is much more difficult than by being here. Is clear what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Any other questions? So actually, Vishayendriya Sanyogat. Now this verse can be understood at various levels. One is at the level of one experience of sense gratification also. When I indulge in sense gratification, initially the experience is like pleasurable. But after sometimes the same pleasure starts decreasing, then it becomes boring and then it becomes frustrating. Actually, the problem of sense gratification from the spiritual perspective is that it makes our Krishna consciousness tasteless. Why does it make our Krishna consciousness tasteless? Because if this is ignorance, passion, goodness and transcendence. So Krishna conscious pleasure requires us to go towards transcendence. And if I engage in sense gratification, then my consciousness is moving away from transcendence, even away from goodness, towards passion. And the more my consciousness is in passion, the less I can experience spiritual reality. The less I can experience spiritual happiness. So, even if when we engage in sense gratification, even if nobody discovers it, even if no problem comes up, the real problem is that we will find our Krishna consciousness becoming tasteless. You remember the example of the fish out of water? So the more we engage in sense gratification, the more the fish is going away from the water, further and further away. So actually, the more we engage, the further we go, and that much distance we will again have to come back. So if we make our consciousness materialistic, at the end of the day, no material enjoyment is going to go on forever. So afterwards, I'll have to stop it, and then again, I'll have to come back to Krishna consciousness. But that will take so much trouble, so much effort for me to rise back again. So therefore, why get into it? So for us, the tastelessness that results, that is very troublesome, because that makes the spiritual life very dry, very monotonous, and then that makes us vulnerable to further temptations. Further temptations which drag us further away from Krishna. So at one level, we can understand this in terms of one experience of sense gratification. That initially it tastes like poison, but after some time it just becomes boring, it becomes empty. It makes our spiritual life seem so dry and tasteless. At another level, we can see this in terms of a lifetime. When a person is young, that person may enjoy. And the person may think, okay, I can't enjoy forever. But he says, again, okay, I enjoy, I lose my capacity to enjoy. Again, after some time, I get the capacity to enjoy, I'll enjoy again. So in youth, there may be some enjoyment. But as a person starts becoming old, then Parinaame Vishamiva. When a person loses the capacity to enjoy, at that time life becomes hellish. Because the person doesn't know, what am I living for? All my life I just lived for sense enjoyment. And now suddenly, helplessly, the capacity for sense enjoyment is going away from me. The capacity for sense enjoyment goes away means the body loses capacity. And even if the body doesn't, somebody takes some chemicals and keeps the body's capacity. But still, the body loses physical attractiveness. And one just can't sustain the capacity to enjoy for very long. And then there is tremendous frustration that results because of that. The desire to enjoy is there, but the capacity is completely gone away. So we know this is the condition of ghosts, isn't it? Ghosts have the desire to enjoy, but they don't have the capacity to enjoy. So when people who have lived materialistically, they come into the old age, their existence is almost similar. They have the desire to enjoy, but they just don't have the capacity to enjoy. It's Parinaame Vishamiva. And of course, beyond that is, somebody may enjoy this life, but afterwards there is hellish suffering as a reaction to what one is doing. So Parinaame Vishamiva can be in hell also. So Parinaame Vishamiva can be at this level, immediately after sense gratification, even at this level, in old age, when the capacity goes away. And Parinaame Vishamiva can also be in hell. Now, many people in material life, they face something which is called by psychologists as a midlife crisis. Now, what is a midlife crisis? That a person starts a particular career, works hard, and then the person, say, comes by the age of 35, 40, 45, that's middle age, roughly. So at that time, the person starts feeling, did I choose the right career? Have I achieved something in my life? Or should I have done something else? What did I get in my life by living for so long? So, at that time, when a person starts feeling that, have I chosen the right track in my life? And a person becomes overwhelmed by anxiety. So, large number of people face this. Because now there is no varnashram, so ultimately people choose their own careers. And when they choose their own careers, there is so much competition all around that we always, you remember we say, it is better to be a big fish in a small pond than a small fish in a big pond. Because in the big pond, no matter how big we become, there are always bigger fish. So people compare with others who have earned more than them, who have bigger houses than them, who have more cars than them. Says, did I achieve something in my life or not? And people start getting into a midlife crisis. And often it can become, unless it is dealt with properly, that can lead to a lot of psychological trouble. So, sometimes even as devotees, especially as brahmacharis, may also get into a midlife crisis. That midlife crisis is not so much because of, it's not that when a person becomes 40, the sexual desire suddenly becomes strong. It's not like that. Actually, if one has not practiced as a brahmachari very seriously, then seriously means two aspects to it. One is our internal development of Krishna consciousness. The other is the external taking up of responsibilities in Krishna's mission. So if we have not done that seriously, then by the time when we come to middle age, we start thinking, did I do the right thing by becoming a brahmachari? Yeah, look at my friend. You know, he's a big manager in a big company now. Look at that friend, he has got such a nice house. And look at that. What have I achieved in my life? So, actually, in youth, sometimes our minds are so restless that we may feel that, just let me focus on sadhana and let me focus on this and let me focus on that. We may avoid responsibilities. But all of us have the passion that I want to do something. I want to do something worthwhile. I want to do something wonderful. So, if we don't take up serious responsibilities, then maybe 10, 15 years down the line, we may feel, what did I achieve in my life? I became a brahmachari, but what did I achieve? So therefore, it is important, if we even look back at our life till now, probably the most outstanding moments of our life are usually closely associated with the moments when we just struggled, worked hard, did something extraordinary after a lot of sacrifice and commitment and challenges. So we can't have that high tension mode constantly in our life. But those moments that are there, they become the outstanding moments of our life. So same way, even in our brahmachari life, we will need some sense of material achievements. And we will get that if we take up responsibility, surely we will get that. In fact, often in brahmachari life, we can do much more. For example, in Krishna consciousness, there are devotees who may be sort of heading big temples at the age of 35, 40. And to lead projects like that in an outside company may require a person to spend 20, 30 years in the company. So actually, even from a material point of view, if you just want to look from a material point of view, Krishna consciousness offers us promising career prospects. Not in terms of, say, having our own possessions. But there are two aspects to material achievement. One is just having our own possessions. I have this car, I have this house, I have this. But the other aspect of material achievements is that, okay, whatever abilities I have, whatever talents I have used them responsibly. I have done something worthwhile with my life. So that is also an aspect of material achievement that is important. And Krishna consciousness gives us a lot of channels for that. If we take up that initiative, then there is so much we can do in Krishna's service. So that's why we cannot have, as I said, continuous stress in our spiritual life. But at the same time, there are times when the situations, the responsibilities call for sacrifice, call for stress. And if we do that, those moments will, in retrospect, become the highlights of our spiritual life. And they will inspire us to go on. Yes, by all this struggle, by all the sacrifice, this is worthwhile. I am doing something wonderful in my life. So it's not that I may not be wonderful, although maybe I would like for the people to believe that I am wonderful, but I know what I am. But even if I am not wonderful, still by Krishna's mercy, I am able to do wonderful things in His service. That is the external aspect. So if devotees that take up responsible service, then we won't ever face that midlife crisis sort of situation. The other is the internal aspect of Krishna consciousness. Now all of us, we need to individually, as I said earlier, find out what gives us strength and what enriches our Krishna consciousness. And as we keep practicing Krishna consciousness, this will happen, this will become stronger. We'll find that there are certain activities which do give us a strong sense of connection with Krishna, by which we feel the shelter of Krishna, we feel satisfaction in Krishna consciousness. And if we do those activities more and more seriously, then we learn that whatever life may bring in future, I know how to cope with it. It's not that I am so advanced, but I know by doing this I can cope with it, I can tolerate it, I can transcend it. So both ways, externally and internally, as devotees, we need to have at least some aspects that we are serious about. And then we can, actually then our life story will not be like this. It will be the previous verse. Vishaparagre vishamiva pariname amritopamam. So right now there is poison, but there is nectar in the end. And that end doesn't only mean when I go back to the spiritual world. That end means even in this life. Even in this life, once we go beyond the stage of anartha nivritti, then actually it's pariname amritopamam. It's the real struggle of spiritual life is only in anartha nivritti. Anartha nivritti is a long, bumpy ride. But once, if we keep going through it, then it's not, the stage of anartha nivritti is definitely not eternal. It is, like everything else in the world, temporary. But what makes it longer than what it needs to be is that, while in the anartha nivritti stage, we go 10 steps ahead and then we pause. Should I go ahead? And sometimes we think, I go 10 steps ahead and then I go 5 steps behind again. And then again I go 10 steps ahead, again I go 5 steps behind. That makes the anartha nivritti stage much longer than what it needs to be. But if we stay determined and keep moving forward, then anarthas get over. And then that pariname amritopamam is something which we can experience even in this life. Any questions about this? Any indicator to know whether anartha nivritti is happening or not? First thing is, we don't have to put ourselves in provocative situations to find out. That's the first most important thing. Life itself will present us provocative situations. And we can ask, we will ourselves be able to observe. I can clearly see, say, before I was introduced to Krishna consciousness, when I would face problems, I would get so disturbed by those problems. Now also I get a little bit disturbed, but certainly not that much. So that's one way to understand that, okay, my irritability, my agitation, irritability is a sign of basically of anger, or it could be a sign of illusion. That has decreased. Similarly, the lust, the greed, life will itself, in its normal course, present as provocations. And by observing our responses, we can understand, okay, has the anartha gone down, has it come up? See, if we just look at our consciousness on a daily basis, we may not observe much difference. Because daily our consciousness is like a sine wave. Sometimes we feel very, at the, that peak is going towards Krishna, sometimes the trough is going towards Maya. So we may not feel transformation. But if you look at a long-term perspective, 6 months ago, 1 year ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, then we find out the substantial difference. So, anarthas themselves are not quantifiable. So anartha nirutti itself is not quantifiable, but it is observable in terms of our responses to provocative situations. And over a period of time, we learn. We'll observe that, yes, we do become more mature, we do become more self-controlled, Krishna-centered. So by especially observing our responses to provocative situations, we can understand it. Okay? Any other questions? Yes. What are the sense gratification that one can get in Brahmacharya Ashram? Is overeating a sense gratification? Overeating is not a very serious problem as long as it doesn't obsess our mind too much. That is the first thing. You know, we want to be Krishna conscious, not just Krishna Prasad conscious. That is the main thing. Especially if it doesn't obsess the mind too much and it doesn't have any physical problems because of eating too many sweets or eating too much of this. So either I become too overweight or I start getting that enjoyment of the tongue translates into sexual desire. If that happens, then there has to be a reason to say be concerned about it. But otherwise, there is no... one doesn't have to become too worried about it. Actually speaking, in brahmachari life, we can get delicious prasadam, but overall there is some regulation that is there. You know, just following the regulation of brahmachari life itself, you know, we are not choosing what we eat. Whatever we are given, we take that. And occasionally there are some delicious food also comes up. So in that sense, that is itself a significant regulation. But only if it is too much obsessing our mind or it is having some physical consequences, then one needs to worry about it. Over a period of time, we start observing ourselves. Even that sometimes the pleasure is not worth the trouble. Now, all of us will come to that consequence after some time. And the time may vary. When you see that if I overeat, then after that I feel so sleepy. Sometimes I sleep so long and then I feel I wasted so much time. And even if I don't sleep, I eat and then whatever I am doing, I'm just not able to concentrate. I'm half awake, half asleep. And then I feel so lethargic about everything. So if that sort of things are happening, then we'll ourselves learn, okay, this is not what I should. I should not be doing this. So it's something which we all learn by experience. So now even eating prasadam extra or eating prasadam selectively, I'm not sure whether we can literally use the word sense gratification for it. Because generally we use the word sense gratification in terms of that which is disconnected with Krishna, that which disconnects us from Krishna. This is Krishna prasadam, but if it is indulged disproportionately, then it can take us away from Krishna, but doesn't have to. Actually, as one starts aging, it will happen that the attraction to Krishna prasadam will spread over to other forms of Krishna also.
So initially our spiritual attraction may be concentrated on Krishna Prasad, sometimes concentrated exclusively on Krishna Prasad only. But afterwards, over a period of time, it gets distributed.
Other manifestations of Krishna also. Regarding other forms of sense gratification, and kirtans, dancing is there, singing is there, playing musical instruments is there. All those are wonderful. You have some specific things in mind? No, means you're asking about this question. Actually, Krishna consciousness, you know, is Western. There's a Western scholar who says that, who said a very interesting observation. He says, bhakti is sensual spirituality. This is quite a striking observation. Bhakti is sensual spirituality. Actually, the word sensual may have some negative connotation, but his emphasis is that actually the senses are involved in this form of spirituality. In the path of jnana, the senses are withdrawn. So it is senseless spirituality. Not senseless in the sense of meaningless, but senseless in the sense of not involving the senses. So rather than using the word sensual, we can use sensory spirituality. Sensual indicates sense gratification. Sensory means it involves the senses. So we can find out how our senses can be best engaged. Let's see if this is working till now. No. Maybe I'll talk about it in next class. Let's move forward now. Is it clear? Any other questions? So let's look at happiness in the mode of ignorance now. Yatagrechanubandhecha Sukham mohanam atmanaha Sukham mohanam atmanaha Nidralasya pramadottam Tattamasamudarutam. So from beginning to end, yatadagrechanubandhecha Sukham mohanam atmana, that happiness which creeps the soul in delusion and increases the delusion. Nidra alasya pramadottam. Krishna gives this the character, that which comes from sleeping. Now Krishna has said yukta ahara, yukta vihasya, yukta cheshtasya karasu, yukta sapnavabodhasya. So yukta nidra is not tamasic. But here when there is a disproportionate, nidra alasya pramadottam. So lethargy, sleep and intoxication. Actually speaking, when a person is just acting lazy, not doing anything, then there is no pleasure in it. There is just the perverse satisfaction of having avoided some trouble. You know, if I wake up and I have to do some work and I don't want to do that work, there I just act as if I'm sleeping, or I actually try to sleep, or I just sleep overall, and then I feel, yes, I have avoided the trouble. But actually, there is no pleasure in that. There is at the back of the mind, oh, there is this trouble and I'm not coping with it. So that itself creates a sense of guilt or a sense of irritation, a sense of decreased self-esteem. And actually, we're not dealing with the problem also. So the external problem is still there, and lethargy, it also decreases our morale internally. The external problem doesn't go away, the internal morale goes down, and we make things more difficult for ourselves. So that's why agrejanubandhecha, from beginning to end, the only pleasure that is there is just in the vague sense of evasion of trouble. Although that trouble may be for a constructive purpose, but by that evasion of trouble, one thinks that, yes, I'm so clever, I avoided it, I got away from it. But we can't get away from it very long. And that's why this is not something which is at all conducive to transcendence. Now, after describing these three kinds of pleasures, Krishna will move forward and then he will talk about broad principles of Varnashrama. So the idea is, why is Krishna talking about all this? He's talking about the jnana of a karma yogi. So then after this, he will talk about how karma yoga, the actual practice of it, is incorporated in Varnashrama so that it raises a person towards transcendence. That we'll discuss in the next class. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. గౌరవ భక్తులందరికీ జయ. తాయి గౌర ప్రేమానందయ్య.